Welcome, welcome, ladies and gentlemen.
Let's get started.
Straight from New York, yo, yo, this handsome man.
Yo, yo, ah, now, fucker. Tuned in to Al Joe, the funk master. Watch your grill, yoga, knock out cold fast. And talking shit, now we talking facts. Where the mountain off the back, you in trouble, came to burst your bubble. I don't shelter punches, they find home on your mind about a double. This the weekly scraps. You don't need a map, GPS, I'm right here to lead a dash. The world doesn't know it needs, but I grow the seeds. Planet, fuck a name and a fame. Only legacy remains. Remember the name, Al Jermaine Sterling.
It ain't shit, it ain't safe.
Motherfuckers.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the weekly scraps. We are joined by our guest, Jake Fine, aka Taekwondo Guy. What is up?
What's the word?
Ain't shit, man. Just another casual day, getting some work done. Shout out to the MMA guru.
Yo.
Yo, I got his guys are actually attacking me.
Bro, he has really cute. He has a very loyal fan base. You got to give it to him.
It is cool. It is cool to see. So props and kudos to you for that. And just to clarify on that, people think I'm like talking shit about the guy. I'm not talking shit about the guy. You can have an opinion on a sport and not actually have done it at a high level. That wasn't the case. I just felt like some of the critique he makes, it could be a little bit disrespectful to some of the athletes. And I even like for myself, like just when I describe these fights, we break them down. I'm always conscientious about just what I'm saying and how I'm saying it, because I know how it feels as a fighter. Like people could say, oh, for tough guys, we're like super sensitive. I'm like, do you guys forget we're still not robots. We may be trained killers, but we're not robots. Yeah. We're not emotionless people. We just know how to turn on the switch when it's time to go. It's time to fucking go, you know? So, but people that say that, like, well, if you're a fighter, you're very emotional. I'm like, yeah, I am. And I will emotionally destroy you and rip every limb from your body.
Like, well, it's like, what do you expect if you spend, like, with fighting, it's so focused and you're like sacrificing so much of your life and like good, like ability to feel good for like 6 weeks. You're going to be emotional about what you're doing, of course.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
So I get it. I get it from their perspective. They might not understand that side, that we are still just like you. We put our pants on in the morning the same way you do, one leg at a time. If you could put both in at the same time, that's very, very impressive. But
you got to be sitting down for that.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, shout out to him, though, because, again, good following for him to have built. And I didn't know he was paralyzed. Somebody was telling me he was paralyzed. I didn't know if, like, they were making a joke. They're like, his wheelchair army, he'll hit you with a wheelchair jiu-jitsu armbar. I was like, I don't know if this is a joke or this is like, serious.
I guess he used to train and then he had some injury. Now he's in a wheelchair. I was
a
just
street
I
fight, gather, someone said.
I gathered all this from like comments that were left on your page.
Yeah.
So
that's supposedly a street fight.
Yeah, I didn't gather that, but I knew he can't train. So people were kind of getting on us for that.
Yeah. Well, they said the street fight happened and then he got really, really injured. And I'm like, that's one reason why I do not street fight. That's one. And two, if you're out street fighting and that happens to you, that sucks, because you think a street fight, like anything goes in the streets though. So it's kind of,
yeah,
you do kind of play at your own risk. I got a friend from college that I went to school with and, I lived with, actually, and he actually got shot getting into a scuffle back home in the street, you know, so.
Holy fuck.
It's one of those things, and he got shot in his spine, and he is now paralyzed in a wheelchair. He plays basketball still. He was a really good basketball player, still helps out. He plays competitive basketball, so it's cool that he's still active and things like that, but.
Yeah, that's sad.
Yeah, it just, one of those things, man, like you kind of play that game and whatever happens is left to chance, you know?
Yeah. So there's no cage and a referee and judges and shit. Yeah.
Like, again, no, I wasn't shitting on the guy. And I think people kind of misinterpret my passion for the sport in such a way where they think that's what I'm doing. I'm like, no, I'm not. Anyone can be involved in the sport. Like, there's no barrier to entry. I was just talking about this the other day. Like, legitimately, anybody can get into the sport. You could be a criminal. You could be maybe not like a sex offender. Hopefully, they don't let those motherfuckers in. But you could have the craziest record and trying to change your life around, and you could get an opportunity to come into the sport, change your life for the better, And that's what I love about this, you know? So I'm just passionate about it. So when I hear people trying to throw shade, it kind of just rubs me the wrong way. Yeah. Of course, I'm going to say something. Like,
I mean, he did kind of disrespect you.
He says an alpha says shit. Like, an alpha is not going to just sit there and just take shit from somebody. So I'm sorry if I offended anybody for just being myself, but it is what it is. But again, kudos to you, MMA guru.
Yeah, I think we're still getting comments from his boys.
It is. It's cute. And I mean that sincerely. Like, shout out to you for actually amassing that type of following. I think it's pretty cool.
He's dying.
But other than that, yeah. We got Dennis Bazooka out here. He just got to Vegas maybe, what was that, Sunday. I got back from UFC Long Island on Monday. Got to watch the fights down there. We've been helping him cut weight because he is fighting this Tuesday on the Ultimate Fighter. Wow. Completely wrong. He's fighting this Tuesday on the Dana White Contender Series. The Ultimate Fighter. Dude, I can't keep up with this shit.
So there's like fighting a lot of these little shows now.
Yeah, yeah. He's fighting some guy named Callio. I think an alpha male guy. Tough dude, but it should be a good fight. This guy's a grappler. I'm liking Dennis in this one. He's got a ton of grappling training partners between myself and Marab. I don't think he's going to find a pace any more relentless than that. So to be able to deal with us, I think this should be the one that he gets done. Cause this is going to be, I think it's going to still be a tough fight. Like, this obviously wrestling could change the fight. Like, wrestlers dictate how the fight goes, whether it's going to be a crazy pace, a slow pace, unless it's like the Ben Askren Masvidal situation where it's just like, well, right out of the gate, you just got clipped out of the sky and that's it. So yeah. I think this is going to be a fun fight. And I think Dennis is going to slowly chip away and shut this guy's lights out, and people are in for a fun fight. So I'm excited for this one. Al just got in yesterday as well.
Oh, sick.
Yeah, he got in last night, and I got some sparring in with Marab. My shoulder's been bugging me a little bit. It's the same one I had the surgery on. So I had the labrum repair back in 2013, and like, obviously it got better, but with each training camp, each year that goes by, and I use this thing constantly, and I'm grinding through these jujitsu sessions and wrestling sessions, it puts a lot of stress on that joint again. So sometimes it will get inflamed and I feel everything kind of tighten up. So I kind of get a little nervous with that. I didn't want to spar yesterday, but I told Marab, I was like, I'll suck it up. I'll get three rounds in with you. And then Sunday and then Monday, I think I'm gonna just take those days off and kind of just relax. So today is just going to be a weight cut. Dennis weighs in tomorrow. And then Tuesday's the fight. So I'll get those couple of days off to kind of just chill, regroup my body, and get ready for the rest of the week.
Yeah.
So big week.
How's Dennis looking?
I think he's looking good. I mean, I'm not going to lie. He came here. I was a little nervous because when I left New York, he looked phenomenal. And then we were doing some crazy puke drill sessions. And then when I came here, we did a puke drill. It was kind of moving in slow motion, and I wasn't sure what was going on. I think it was the heat, the nutrition, and then we did a bike session where it was just like bike sprints. And that gave me a lot more confidence. I was like, okay, maybe it was just like the transition, you coming in. Because they say when you do travel to someplace, yeah, like you don't feel it the first and second day. It's like a couple of days later where it kind of hits you. And that's why they say you need like that 21 days to acclimate the right way or whatever. Some people, everyone's different, but that session had me a little worried, but then the next session had me feeling a lot more confident. I was like, okay, we're good. I was like, cause I had to call Ray. I was like, I'm not sure if it's the heat and the jet lag, but hopefully that's what it is. And I told him, I was like, after I seen that we were a lot more confident in the conditioning. And that's happened to me before too. When I first came out to Vegas, and he doesn't come here all the time, it's been a very similar experience. Like, you feel good like the first day, and then you go through the workout and you're like sucking wind and you just don't know what the hell's going on. So I think for him to come out here early was the smarter thing to do. And and that 3-hour time zone difference. This kid is coming from the West Coast already, but him coming to the Vegas heat, I think it's going to be very different for him as well.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. Just this, the traveling wears you down, I'm sure. Plus he's cutting weight, so.
Yeah. So that makes sense. That the calories, all that stuff, you're not really the best form the last day. Even myself, man, like cutting the weight on those last 2 days, you feel it. You feel mentally drained and you feel physically drained. You start to move through slow motion. So hopefully that's all that was. And I like to think it was just because of that next training session that gave us all a lot more confidence. Marab, we all said the same thing. I was like, dude, not gonna lie, you had us a little nervous, but we're good. We're back where we're supposed to be. So we're all good now.
Good. Yeah. So does that air on Tuesday, or is there a delay between when the fight happens and when it actually goes on ESPN Plus?
It's going to be live Tuesday night. So okay. I think the Contenders out here starts at like 3. No, I lied. I think it starts at like 5 and starts back home on the East Coast like 8 p.m. Eastern.
Okay.
So I think Dennis is the third fight of the night. So it's going to be a good one. And then shout out to Bashrat, the Bashrat brothers. Farid is going to be on the card as well. I haven't really got much training in with him. I did one session with him. We kind of moved around a little bit with the grappling and clinch work. I posted a clip of that. And that was over at Extreme Couture. He's going to get an opportunity to be another set of brothers in the UFC if he can get it done, which I think he will. He's got a good fight coming up, and I think he's going to probably smash this guy. He's a fun fighter to watch. Just like Dennis, those hands, high-level striker. If he grapples, it goes there, but he's gotten a lot better doing a lot of one-on-ones with Jake Shields and that type of thing. So I think he's putting in the smart work in the same way like Dennis is putting in the smart work as well.
All right, sweet. So should be a good night then.
We got a good card. Yeah, we do. It's a good card. Other than that, man, I haven't really been doing shit. I don't know about you, but just kind of just been trying to maintain my body, getting back into PT and all that stuff.
Yeah, I just moved back in, so I'm like just getting my feet settled, basically.
Yeah.
I went to the gym yesterday, but that's one day.
Good. Yeah. You also drank 3 cups of coffee today. Shame on you.
Bro, why do you think I'm pearling this podcast?
Going backwards.
I got set up like this because I was wired.
Yeah.
Literally.
3 cups of coffee would probably do that to you.
You text me 3 minutes later, I'm set up, move back into my workspace. We're good.
Yeah. All right. So we got UFC London. We're not going to talk about the main event first, which is what we normally do, but we'll start with the main people's event, I would say, which is Paddy Pimblett versus Jordan Leavitt.
Bro.
I mean, this was a great fight. People thought that Paddy was just going to run through this guy and just do what he was going to do. And I'm like, listen, man, Jordan is a tough dude. I sparred with this guy before. I've grappled with him, strictly grappling with him before. He is crafty, slick on the feet, and hard to hit. And something like that makes it a wild card for him to jump in there with a guy like Paddy, who's got all this hype for the right reasons. He's putting in the right work. And I think Paddy, as much fun as he likes to have, the guy is a serious person and a serious problem because he works so hard. So when you have that, you have the charisma, the guy has the work ethic, and he has the following in the fan base, and outspoken, just is him, unapologetically him.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's what's super cool about a guy like that. But I really thought Jordan was going to get it done just because of, man, I'm like, man, I think they're underestimating him. But Paddy came out there and actually did his homework. He weathered an early storm, and it was a fun fight.
I almost feel like I wanted to get your opinion on this, but the first round seemed to have people kind of split. I know you tweeted out that you thought Jordan won. I thought that Paddy stole it at the end because I felt like he did more damage in the round based on what he did at the end there. And you always, but I feel like it gets muddy when like the control time way outweighs the damage.
Yeah, that's what it was for me. I'm like, man, 4 minutes of control time versus like 4 punches that weren't really like, oh my God. If they were like, oh, I rocked you, I'm like, yo, you stole the round.
But didn't he kind of get dropped, Jordan?
I don't think so. Not that I remember.
At the end of the round, he ended up on the ground somehow. I don't know if it was because of a punch or he
It was fell. A shot. I know he shot in. And I think Paddy tried to throw a knee. I think it was a knee. I would have to pull it up and look again. But I know the end of that first round, they ended up in a scramble and Jordan was transitioning in again. And then Paddy ended up on top and kind of reversed him. And this was, mind you, this was the last like 35, maybe 40 seconds of the round.
Mm-hmm.
So not much happened in that transition, but it was a lot of scrambling, but not much like definitive, like, okay, this was a iconic moment in this round where it's like, okay, this stole the round, sealed it. I don't think that actually happened. At least with me.
My whole thing was just like, Patty definitely did more damage in the round, even if most of it was condensed into like a small amount of time and it wasn't that much damage. That's why I feel like it's such a toss up. Cause it, it was like how significant was the damage, but I was worried. I'm not worried, but I was getting conscious of like Patty was holding that guillotine?
Yeah.
For like a long ass time. And you could like see his back start to turn red. And I was like, oh, I feel like he's going to get really tired. Like, I feel like he's going to fatigue. Too. That's why I was so impressed when he actually won the fight. Like,
well, even let's talk about that. I mean, what he did to win the fight, in my opinion, was when he had that unorthodox, had an arm choke from behind. And I'll do that when I grapple. Like, if I can't get the rear naked choke and you start doing this defense where you're like here and you're trying to protect your neck, I'll come under because I got these long ass dangly Betty spaghetti arms, and I'll go underneath the across the head, right into the armpit, and I'll lock up a head and arm choke type of lock to finish the choke.
Okay.
And I've submitted so many people in that position in the room. It's actually mind blowing because it's like you think that you can't get it, but eventually, slowly but surely, it sinks in, and then you're either passing out or you're tapping, you know? So, yeah.
Wait, I thought it was a rear naked though. Am I wrong?
No, a rear naked would be like more like you slide behind and then you put it behind the head.
Okay.
This is kind of like a rear naked.
Because that's what Bruce Buffer said.
What?
It was like via rear naked choke.
No, but he didn't submit him with that. Wait, no. Sorry. I'm thinking the transition of when he was on the back before, when he hit him with the knee.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So when he hit him with the knee, that's like a head and arm, but it does turn into a little bit of a rear naked position. And then he landed that knee and that made Jordan drop down. And then when he did that, he put the hooks in, and that's when he submitted him with the traditional rear naked choke. So yes, that is correct.
Okay. But
that knee beforehand, no one's thinking that they're going to get kneed in the face in that position. And I think that's what happened. It kind of caught Jordan Leavitt by surprise. And when he cracked him like that, man, it's hard to recover. It really is.
So when I saw that, when he threw the knee, I was like, that was there the whole, like, it almost was like a light bulb moment where I was like, oh, he could have thrown that like a while ago. I don't know. Like, it just seemed like obvious after he did it, but beforehand, it didn't seem like it was coming.
I don't know if it's that obvious. I mean, I feel like a lot of people are in that position all the time and people don't go for that. I'm trying to find the submission right here.
I just mean like, oh, that was perfect. Like it was there. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh yeah. In that sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you never see people get that creative. It's either they're doing jujitsu or they're doing wrestling or they're striking. You don't see a lot of people who blend both. Patty was able to blend both in that situation. And in that sequence, that knee won him the fight. If he doesn't land that knee, Jordan just hangs out in that position, defends. Patty's burning his arms out, and maybe we're in a similar round that we had in the first round. So I think landing that spot and finding that kill shot, I think that hurt Jordan really bad. It rocked him a bit. And I think the shots you don't see and don't expect are the ones that really mess you up the most. And I think that's what happened. He got rocked, wasn't aware of what was going on. And then Jordan had his arm trapped. Oh my goodness, I forgot about that.
His arm was trapped.
And the fact that he was even able to defend for that long, I was like, that's impressive. But the fact that he was even able to end up in that position for Patty, I was like, that's really impressive. So kudos to him, man. His jiu-jitsu was solid. I knew both would be solid, but it's just one of those things. Like, I just thought it was going to be a tough fight and not one that he was just going to steamroll the guy because it was a lopsided matchup in the grappling department. Both guys are very well-versed. Mm-hmm. And I think Jordan showed that. He defended all the judo throws, which was nice because I think he hit that throw on Kazula, Patty, if I'm not mistaken.
He might have.
So it's when you're in that 50-50 position and the guy will grab the outside elbow, or if you have double underhooks, they'll grab the wizard and they'll grab the other side and they'll step their leg to the outside and they'll reap the knee. Now, when you reap the knee, it puts you in a better position to break the posture and throw people in the head. You've seen this with RDA versus Khabib. Khabib hit a beautiful throw on RDA like this years ago. And I think Patty hit a move like that. I think he hit that same move on Kazula. but he tried to do it on Jordan, but Jordan was hip to it and was able to defend it.
I do remember that. They pointed it out that he was defending that really well.
Yeah. Marab hits me with that all the time.
Yeah. I have a video of it, I think.
With Marab doing it to me?
You were practicing, but I think he just flipped you.
Yeah.
It was when that...
Well, he does it to me in sparring, though. That's when it's like,
fuck, yeah. That's the... So the one thing I wanted to ask you to elaborate on is, like, it seemed like Patty was able to get the fight to the ground a couple times without using wrestling at all. So, but I'm curious. Like, he would throw up a guillotine and the guy and Jordan would fall. Like, from his back was against the fence, he threw up a guillotine, wrapped his legs, and then Jordan fell. And then the fight was on the ground.
Well, Jordan didn't fall. Jordan went to the ground with him. And, you know, there's a difference between, like, just falling. Like, Jordan defended the guillotine the correct way because Patty jumped guard. So when someone jumps guard with a guillotine attempt, if you fall into their guard, they're in a dominant position where they could potentially choke you out. Mm-hmm. So for Jordan, being that he's an expert in grappling, he was able to get to the outside and pass Patty's guard and get to a position where he was safe, where that choke was just like, I'm just holding on for no reason. Where now, if you're in that choke and you're holding on to the head and the guy passes to side control, Ovis St. Preux hit this like three different times at three different fights, maybe even four. He locks his hands around the head and he'll go to a traditional Von Flue choke, which is now being dubbed the St. Preux choke, because you controlling the head. Now, just visualize this. I'm grabbing your head in a guillotine. You pass to my side. Now, my shoulder is now pushing into my own carotid because I'm holding your head. So my arm is like this. It's hiked up. So this carotid is already being compromised. As you pass the side control, you grab around my back and you lock your hands and you drive your shoulder into the other carotid and you have a submission choke and you could put somebody out like that. So Patty was actually in trouble when Jordan passed that guard and was still holding on to his head. But then he let go and was able to escape and get back up and to create another scramble. And then Jordan went right back on the attack again, looking for the takedowns and pressing him against the cage. So it was kind of like a jockey for position. It wasn't like Patty took him down. You know, mm-hmm. if anything, in wrestling, if you do that shit, that bullshit, and you jump to your butt, that's you give up points, you know?
Okay.
So
that's what I was trying to get at. Like, is he gonna be able to get further and further without the wrestling? Because they said he does more judo, not much wrestling.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, if he can force the action on the feet and get guys to tie up with him, he could probably hit a throw, or he could probably jump guard. Sometimes he'll jump guard against the cage looking for triangle chokes. Like he hit that one in Cage Warriors where the guy had him against the clinch, he tied up and just jumped over into a flying triangle and he got the submission.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just one of those things. It's going to work until it doesn't. So kudos to him for making it work. And I think he's just a tough dude because he's not afraid to go to the ground. And those are the most dangerous guys. The guys like a Charles Oliveira. I don't want to say Makhachev, but Makhachev, we haven't really seen him off of his back, but guys that are not afraid to pull guard or go to their back and fight like that, those guys are super dangerous because it makes them on the feet almost like, I got to knock you out because I know if I go to the ground, it's probably going to be in your favor and that's going to be more of a risk for me.
Yeah.
I just want to see the end of the first round. So 8 seconds left. Okay, yes. So I'm watching right now, 50 seconds left. Patty's still in the cage. Jordan's pushing against him. Patty lands a knee. Jordan does a foot stomp. Jordan lands a cross as Patty runs to the center. They break apart. Jordan comes with a flying jumping switch kick and almost connects to Patty's face. Now Patty tries to throw something back. Now Patty catches Jordan in a guillotine choke with 30 seconds left. And Jordan defends. And then Jordan gets hit with an elbow. That's one. 20 seconds left. And that's, yeah. So it's like, there's not much for me to go, you should definitely win this round based on damage, because he didn't really land anything. It was just that one elbow. Okay, we've got 9 seconds left. He lands one hammer fist. It's kind of short. Another one behind the head a little bit. 3, 4, and buzzer. So and then he ends up in mount. So if that fight were to continue, if there was more time on that clock, that's a dangerous position to be in. So he lands in like a mounted position with 2 seconds left. And I think that's where people are saying, oh, but I'm like, but you can't say what could have happened. You got to say what actually happened in that fight, what actually happened in that round. I think Jordan just did more.
Okay. That makes sense.
That's what I think. And just watching that, it kind of gave me a refresher. Like that jumping, like it's almost like the Karate Kid crane shit. He did a jumping flying kick to Patty's face that like hits him in the chest. And then he throws, then Patty throws something back and catches him in a guillotine as Jordan shoots in. And then Jordan defends because it's a high elbow guillotine, kind of like what Blanchfield hit on that girl against the cage. Jordan recognizes it. He rolls to his back. And then from there, he takes one elbow, then he takes a couple other shots, which is like four that I counted, that landed. And you could be like, okay, that was some damage. But in terms of the course of a 5-minute round, I don't know if that outweighs everything that happened before that. That's the only thing I'm saying. So I get the argument, but I think based on the criteria that I would just give it to Jordan based on that.
Okay.
Like a 30-second sequence. I mean, you won 30 seconds of the fight in that round. I don't know.
I wonder what the judges scored it.
Would be interesting.
Yeah. I would bet that Patty lost the round.
Yeah.
When you break it down like that. But you never know.
That's what I would think. Yeah. But we just don't know because there's no real criteria that the judges actually give us. Like, it's a thankless job.
No.
But
yeah.
If the judges would actually sit down with us at a conference and had like examples, and we could bring examples and we could pull it up and we could have a showcase and we could go, okay, we watched this 5 minutes. How are we interpreting this so that there's some type of blueprint for every single judge and for every single fighter? That is the way you advance the sport, in my personal opinion, because now we know, okay, this is what they're looking at and this is what they're scoring. And then we can have an educational thing and go back and forth. Well, and we can go, no, this is way more significant than that because I've actually been in this position and I know what that feels like. And if you don't know what that feels like, you can't tell me that this is this if you don't know for certain and actually have had that happen to you. And I think that's where you have the conversation and that's where we could kind of have a meeting of the minds and meet in the middle and advance the sport with the judging. And that we have more of a blueprint and kind of have a more of a base model. Like it will make it more black and white. When we're in the middle of the fight, we can go, okay, based on what I do know, this is what they're looking for. And if I do these things, and based on this round, I know this has happened. If I can change the tides and do these things, I can win the round or steal the round kind of thing. And I think that's what's the most important thing about the judging, because we don't know. I don't know if the judge is going to give that round to Patty or they're going to give it to Jordan. I have no idea. But based on my opinion, watching what I watch, I feel like in that situation, I would feel like if I'm Jordan, I would feel like I've won that round.
Yeah, you could definitely make a case. Because it's not like Patty was doing any damage in those positions, really, that Jordan had him in.
Yeah.
But you could, if let's say he was just like hammering his head or whatever, throwing a bunch of elbows in that position.
Yeah.
He's doing more damage, then he's winning the position. So it's just super like, you can still win the position that doesn't look as good by doing more damage. So
that's what I think. And I think in that round, I think unbiasedly, I just feel like Jordan won just based on control time and implementing his game plan. And even though implementing a game plan doesn't mean shit unless you're winning the fight. And I thought he was winning the fight by pushing him against the cage, neutralizing Patty throwing these small shots and Jordan kind of answering it back with his own. I think that kind of answers it right there. So I think you have that neutral position and then you have him controlling the fight for that long. I'm like, damn, bro, that's a long time to be like, if you were trying to escape because the cops were coming for you or you did something bad and I captured you and pressed you against the cage, you ain't going nowhere, bro. You are stuck. You are under my control. I am winning. I am dominating this sequence right here. And for me, I thought he won that round.
Yeah.
But Patty won the fight.
Yeah. He finished it. That's what he does.
I'm excited for him, man. I think the sky's the limit for this guy. And he's made some improvements, notably. And I think, obviously not against the striking department, but I think he's raw. He's tough. He's gritty. He's willing to eat a shot to go get the fight to where he wants it to be. And I think that's what makes him so dangerous. So I'm really excited to see what comes for him next. And also for Jordan. I mean, Jordan has nothing to hang his head about. And again, I think Patty, the hype is real. And I'm looking forward to his next one.
I have one more question on this. So I look at people after his last fight, people were like, oh, Paddy's never going to be a champ. After this fight, maybe it looks a little more promising. I don't know if I would say that, but you look at like who's ahead of him in kind of his generation of this up and coming class of lightweights. Like, do you think he could ever beat Islam? Like, do you think it could ever get to that point?
Is the goal to beat Islam for him?
I don't know.
Does he ever actually have to fight Islam?
I don't know, because if Islam wins this next fight, which I don't think he will, but let's say he does, it seems like if he does win, he has kind of like a long, easy road ahead of him. That's how it appears. I'm not saying that's how it's going to be.
Yeah.
And that's what I think people think it's going to be. And so if he keeps winning, he's eventually going to get it to a title shot, and he might collide with Islam if Islam dominates for as long as people think he will.
Yeah. I mean, it's always possible, but when people kind of jump the queue and they kind of like rush, they go fast forward in like 2-3 years. I'm like, dude, relax. Let the guy make money. Like, not everyone's goal is to become a champion, even though Paddy's is, but I think we all do this for a couple of reasons. The fame or the popularity, mm-hmm. to catapult yourself into a different stratosphere to do other things, other opportunities, to make money, to change your well-being for your own life and your family. And then to become a champion, people who are just a diehard competitors. So Paddy could be all those things in one, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, why do people try to write him off and say he'll never be a champion? Dude, if he makes a shit ton of money on his way to trying to be a UFC champion, that's all that matters. Who gives a shit? If he becomes a household name trying to become a UFC champion, who gives a shit? If he makes it, it's all about setting a goal and hopefully obtaining that goal. And if you come short, aim for the stars, you land on the moon. That's what it's all about. And the last thing I want to say is his post-fight speech for Paddy the Baddie. Oh, Paddy the Baddie. Oh, Paddy. I'm a fan.
Yeah, he's exciting.
He is. But his post-fight speech, man, I thought that was very, very cool of him. Sincere. It felt like it was from the heart. To have him be that in tune with, one, his emotions, two, with what's going on in society, I think it speaks more volumes about the type of person that he is overall. And I thought that was really cool, man. And for him to talk about mental health of men, because let's be honest, man. I am guilty of this, I should say, sure. Where I don't like to talk about my emotions. I don't really like to open up to people. I kind of just have that bravado where it's more so in my head. I just got to bite down, man up, pull my big boy pants up and just handle my business. And that's good and all, but sometimes that can get to you. It can weigh you down, put a lot of pressure on you. And I think that's what Paddy's more so addressing. Like, if the difference is between me going to your funeral the next week versus you having a conversation and being vulnerable, please reach out. Please talk to somebody. I would be there for you. Like, I completely understand that. And I 100% agree with him on that standpoint. So, man, kudos to him, because it's not talked about enough. And I'm more so one of those guys, I'll wait till I am so pent up emotionally that I just blow the fuck up on someone before expressing my emotions. Because if I express my emotions, I'm very direct, man. Like if I feel something like a little uneasy and I don't want to talk about it because I don't like conflict, you know, I'm a very easygoing guy. Like I let things slide. I let this slide. I feel like people should know what the right thing is off the bat, because this is just how I was raised. So when people kind of take advantage or they don't do the right thing, it kind of just grows and builds up. And then eventually I just explode, you know, and I'll say what I want to say. And it's super direct and there's no mincing the words. I'm just saying how I feel. And it's not like I'm trying to intentionally hurt your feelings. I'm just telling you straight how it is. And that's just how I am, you know, but I've been working on that. But yeah, I think I don't know about you. You're 21 years old. So I don't know how much of that you've actually dealt with.
Sure.
But I know for me, with my dad and my upbringing with my family, we were hardened to just like not have emotions, and to just like, if you had emotions, you were made fun of. Like we weren't ever made to talk about things. It was just like, dude, you're being a bitch right now, you know? So kudos to him for bringing that up, man, because I thought that was a very strong talking point and very courageous as him humbling himself and making himself small and vulnerable to the everyday person.
Yeah, for sure. And I like, on a side note for that too, like, I feel like as he's ascending into superstardom, I know that's not what this is about, but as he is kind of climbing that ladder, I feel like moments like those really, like, kind of, they can almost change your trajectory. Like, those things,
it resonates,
really help you relate with the fans. And as he, like, after a win, for him to come, like, that happened a few days ago, he won the fight, then he had that moment, he walks off the octagon crying, and he's crying in his post-fight interview. Like, that's, people really resonate with that, and I think that's only gonna, the fact that that happened is gonna make more people relate to him, and it's gonna make him into an even bigger superstar. And I'm not saying that's what his intent was, but I think it's an interesting point in his career.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
people like honesty, people like real, people like things that they can relate to. I honestly feel like that's why people like me, and because I mean, I don't think I do anything different or super special compared to anybody else, you know, but
it's why people like you and why they don't like you at the same time.
Yeah. Cause I mean, I think when you're yourself and you're honest and, you know, people either love it, respect it, or they don't like it at all, you know? So, shout out to Patty, man. I think he's a real one. I've hung out with him a little bit and it was a little bit of tension because I know Favola has been calling him out nonstop and, you know, they're in the same weight class. So shout out to Favola for wanting to take that fight. That's, you know, he wants an opportunity to take out the Patty the Batty. And there's nothing wrong with that. This is the type of game that we're in. Like, sometimes I'm going to be cordial or friendly with people that are going to fight my friends and training partners. And I have to know when to cut it off and still be respectful. I'm not going to like, oh, you're dead to me. I'm not. It's not like that. But at the same time, it's like, yo, We'll see you on the other side of the war. When this is over, then we'll hang out on the other line, you know?
Yeah.
That's just what it's about. So cool dude, him, Molly McCann. And speaking of that, let's get into some of the other ones before. Let's just real quick, this Jack Hermansson fight versus Chris Curtis. I know a lot of people were booing and not really happy with this, but this is the best Jack Hermansson has ever looked stand-up wise against a tough guy in Chris Curtis, who finishes a lot of his opponents of late. I think he might have finished his last three opponents, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
He's on fire right now. Yeah, I'll look.
No, his last one against Rodolfo was a unanimous decision. But before that, he beat Brandon Allen by finish, Phil Halls by finish, and Kenny Robertson by unanimous decision as well. And before that, he had a couple of finishes in a row, three in a row, four in a row. You know, so this is a guy who's on a tear. He's super dangerous, taking this fight on short notice after he just came off of a really good win. So for him, he has nothing to lose. He's just going forward. He's eating all these shots from this guy who is supposed to be fighting Darren Till and overseas over pond. And people are criticizing, like, I get it. Chris Curtis could have done something different with more variety in his attacks, but all he did was box. But Jack Hermansson, it takes two to tango. You can't have this bomb burner fights unless you have someone who's willing to engage. And I thought Jack Hermansson fought the smart fight. He didn't take the unnecessary risk to please the fans. And he got the job done. And I think he made some leaps and bounds of improvements in the stand-up department. And the fight didn't go to the ground at all. It was all 15-minute stand-up. You know, so for him to do that, I think that's a huge feather in his cap. And I think sometimes the fans could get a little relentless after, especially after Jordan just won. Jordan and Patty Pimblett, that fight, you go into that one and it's kind of like, dude, you just slow down the momentum after Nikita Krylov takes out Alexander Gustafsson and then Patty Pimblett takes out Jordan Levin. Then you go to Jack Hermansson versus Chris Curtis. You're kind of like,
it's kind of like the Rose fight at 274. Yeah. It's like all these banger fights. And then there's just this one dud right at the end. But, this is one of the fights I missed, but I kind of gathered online. Like, it was kind of, was it kind of like another instance where the two, they weren't really trying to, they were more avoiding injury than trying to just go throw fire or caution to the wind?
I wouldn't even call it like avoiding injury.
Or I think, you know what I mean? Yeah.
I think Curtis was trying to lure him into a firefight. And Jack Hermanson was just like, no, if we're going to fight, we're going to fight on my terms in the way that I prepared, in the way that I want to win. And there's nothing wrong with that. I feel like Chris Curtis needed to do something else to have some urgency to win that fight. And he didn't quite do that until like the last 2 minutes of the third round, where he's like really, really walking him down. Now he's taunting him. He's doing like the running man thing and like kind of calling him a bitch and whatever. I'm like, I get that. But at the same time, his job is to win and go home with two checks. Your job is to win and go home with two checks. And I like Curtis a lot. My only criticism is you have nothing to lose in taking a short notice fight. So fucking just go for it, like the way you did for in the third round, because at the end of the day, you flew for the experience. You flew for the opportunity to break into the top 10. What's the worst that's going to happen? You know, you think Jack Hermanson is going to knock you out on the feet? I mean, there's a good chance. I mean, you could always get knocked out, but you know, he's primarily looking to take you down. So just attack this guy. And worst case scenario, you get taken down. But at the end of the day, you know, like you really, really went for it and left no stones unturned in your chance to try to win the fight. He was going to the body nice with that left straight and left hook, but there was no follow-up. It was like one or two shots at the very most. He had Jack Hermanson against the cage. He was chasing him around instead of cutting him off. And then when he did start cutting him off, it was just a little too late. Too little, too late. And I think that was the story of that fight. I know you say you didn't watch it, but that's pretty much the synopsis of that quick little recap on that. And nothing for him to like hang his head about for Curtis. You took the opportunity, you shot your shot. Shit happens. That's just the way the fight game goes sometimes.
It's kind of like a win-win because you take it's obviously you become like a company man when you take these short notice fights.
Yep.
You go in, do what you can. If you lose, it's like, well, I was on short notice. If you win, it's even better.
Yeah.
It's even bigger.
And no one wants to lose to that short notice guy. I don't want to lose to a short notice guy.
Right.
You know, it's a little bit of a catch-22 because like both guys want to play it caught, like play it safe.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I feel like Chris is still in a good spot. Jack got the win.
Yeah.
Like how they stand in the company, I guess.
Mm-hmm. It was a good fight.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a good fight in the sense of the tactical approach. It wasn't like a barn burner. Like I said, Jack's fought smart, kept going for the calf kick. Curtis never addressed it. He tried to check it a couple times, but it was like, again, too little, too late.
Sure.
But again, he did the best he can on short notice against a tough dude who's ranked in top 10 in the world. Nothing to hang your head about. So that's that for me.
No. The Krylov versus Gustafsson fight?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts, man?
I think Gustafsson, you know, maybe he grappled because he wanted to avoid the firefight. That's what I gathered like from that whole assessment. I'm like, maybe he just didn't want to get into a striking matchup and potentially have that happen because he got touched. And I feel like the chin is just gone, man. So it's just one of those things. Yeah. The way I look at it, I'm like, dude, I think it's just time to hang it up. Sometimes it's just not in the cards. And Father Time, again, undefeated, man. Like, your time in the sun is probably up. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, he got hurt early and then just, I think he was trying to recover by just pushing him against the fence, right? Like,
yeah, Nikita came after him, like, right away.
It's crazy.
It was a very short fight. I mean, what am I looking at? How long was this? 1 minute and 7 seconds into the very first round. So, I mean, there wasn't much opportunity for him to do anything. And I've been on that side of the fence. Marlon Moraes sent me to the shadow realm in like 1 minute and 10 seconds, you know? So when a guy storms you like that and then you grab a leg and then he hits you clean on the chin and you go limp like that, dude, I think it's a wake up call to really start like thinking about what is the next step in your life. Because we all get to that point where there's just no return. Like, we just can't do anything else to change the way the story has been written. You know, the writing's on the wall at this point for him. And I think he's had a great, stellar career. And I think I agree with DC, one of the best guys to have never won a title. I mean, arguably, I still think he beat John Jones. I still think he beat DC. So, one of those guys.
That's it shows you how much luck is involved. Like, you can be one like in that group of world-class guys, but how much luck is involved in winning a title? Like you, there's always this element of like the universe had to kind of align in a way, you know? Yeah.
Michael Bisping, Luke Rockhold, 2 week notice, takes the fight, becomes a world champion, knocks out Luke Rockhold on short notice.
Yeah. And then what but he like had four title wins, right?
Who?
Bisping.
Four? Was it four? No, he beat Dan Henderson, and then in a fight that was brutal. He won though. I'll point him, and then he fought. I feel like he fought GSP right after that, and he lost.
Hold on, I'm looking right now just to confirm.
And then GSP went right back into retirement after that. He came out of his little cave, and GSP like.
Oh, yeah, Luke Rockhold, Dan Henderson, then GSP, then he. Lost to Gastelum.
Yeah.
That was it.
And wow. That was short notice also. And then he got knocked out really quick in the first round. And again, I think when it gets to a point like that, when you start not being able to take those shots the way you did when you were younger, there's something to be said about that. Even like I said, going back to Gustafsson, he's fighting at heavyweight now. Was this one 205 or heavyweight? Krylov? I know he was at heavyweight.
It was 205.
Oh, wow. He got back down. Wow. So that says even more, man, for him to go back down and still have like can't take those shots that he was able to take before.
Yeah. I mean, dude, yeah, it's just age, man.
Let me pull up Gustafsson because I want to make sure I'm not misspeaking because I'm pretty sure he went to heavyweight. Yeah, Fabricio Werdum and Anthony Smith and John Jones. So yeah, man.
And that puts him at a four-fight losing streak, unfortunately.
No. Does it? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
John Jones, Anthony Smith, Werdum, and then Krylov.
Yeah, man. Ugh, sucks, man. But everyone has their time in the sun, and everyone's time in the sun will pass. And I think that's just what this is.
Yeah. Speaking of time in the sun, I don't know if you wanted to move on to Molly.
Yeah, Molly, man, she fought lights out, fought brilliant. Honestly, Hannah really didn't have much for her, like at all. I mean, the takedown entries weren't the cleanest. I mean, she was able to at least grab the leg, which is something, but the setup in the entry wasn't there. And I felt like that was going to be the question of how will her takedown entries look? And if she can actually get inside and get on the legs of Molly, can she take the fight to the ground and get Molly tired to kind of make this a more of an even matchup? Because let's be honest. Goldie's stand-up isn't the greatest. It's a little rigid. She's tough, cute girl. Hung out with her at the VIP fan experience once. I thought she was super cool to hang out with, like very nice. But in terms of the fighting style, I just think stylistically, Molly's a lot more fluid. She's a little bit more loose and more clean with her punches. More like she sits down on her punches. Sits down on her spinning elbows, which again, she was so close to get another highlight reel knockout with a spinning elbow, which would have been insane back to back if she got that. And then she followed up with punches, cracked Hannah with the right hand, sat her down, and then the follow up punches, pretty much all she wrote. So for Hannah, it was all about the takedown entries. Would she be able to weather the early storm of Molly McCann in the opening space? And she wasn't able to do that. And I feel like that was a difference. Hannah is like, she is a strong woman, but again, strong doesn't do much for you if you don't know how to use it. If you're not fluid in throwing your strikes, if you're not fluid in knowing how to get to your takedowns, then you're just strong, you know? So this matchup was just a little bit tough in that standpoint. I felt like this, the cards were stacked against Goldie. I mean, she tried, she gave it the old college try. I like saying that. She gave it the old college try. But Molly McCann was just too much for her. And I think she showed that there are levels, you know.
Molly's striking looks like so good.
Yeah. And her in London just seems like she's unbeatable there. You know? That what one do you fight think she lost.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, she lost that one fight two back to back. Talia Santos, which Talia Santos is freaking good. So I think maybe she fought Talia Santos thinking that that was going to be an easier matchup back then when we didn't know what we know now about Talia Santos. She's a stud, studette. And then she lost to Laura Fritzen, whatever the hell Fritzen. That was.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that one might have been at the Apex. I don't even know. Does it say? Let me click. It says UFC Fight Night. Overeem versus Volkov. So where was this? Apex. This was Apex.
I was 21, so probably Apex, yeah.
Yeah, and she was saying, like, when I don't have the crowd there, it's like it's tough to go from that to this, you know, so, yeah. Oh, yeah, Molly McCann fought Jeon Kim? I like Jeon Kim. She's cool. Nope, this is wrong Jeon Kim. Not the same one. My bad. I'm sorry. They are not all the same. I'm sorry.
Bro.
I'm sorry. That was so bad.
The fact that you just said that, dude.
I feel like an asshole. Now I gotta. I repent.
They're not all the same.
Oh my God. I'm
what
sorry.
Does that mean?
I'm sorry.
God damn.
Oh man.
My but yeah, bro. Again. Dude, I'm not even gonna lie. I was at the gym and I was just walking over to do the Stairmaster and I turned on the fights. And it was like literally the second I turned it on, Molly threw the spinning elbow and landed those punches. And I'm just like, holy fuck. Like, her striking is crazy.
Yeah.
Like, it's, that looks so it, man. Clean, man. Two, she, like, she basically, the spinning elbow is what did it in this fight, though. It wasn't like clean, like, but.
Nah, yeah.
That was basically, is that it says on here, spinning elbow and punches was yeah. how she got it done.
Well, just like Jordan, the knee to the submission, this was pretty much what led to the end.
Right.
The spinning elbow rocked her. Then she was still in the cage. She backed up, hit her with like a 1-2, the cross landed flush. Hannah kind of goes like for a split second, kind of like shuts down like a Windows computer, like do-do-do. And then as she tries to recover, Molly just follows up with another big right hand, and that's the fight. I'm like, when you are compromised like that, trying to recover is really hard because that split second that the person is winding up for that kill shot and they get to line you up, that is just free reign. And dude, kudos to anyone who could survive that, man, because that's just like unheard of. She yeah. was done. That fight could have been stopped right there. And I think she would have been okay with it. But then that follow-up was just like, yeah, that was like the nail in the coffin that kind of solidified like, okay, you were for sure out and not coming back from that one. So it was a good yeah. stoppage. And again, I think they could have stopped it when she went down from the first right hand because she kind of just like didn't really like react. It was just like not looking at her opponent. She went down and just like didn't seem like she was there, you know?
Right. Yeah.
But, oh, yeah. Before we forget, the Drake curse is no longer
it's
a
lifted.
Thing.
It's not there.
Is he?
Dude, what did he make? Like $2 million?
They're both going to get rollies, bro. They're going to get some rollies. They asked for some rollies.
Dude, that's so crazy that they have to be like, yo, a year and a half ago, no one knew like really who we were. And now Drake's posting on his story about betting on us and he's posting how he's going to buy us Rollies. Like, that's so crazy to go. Also, Drake seems like he's a huge MMA fan.
I don't know if he's a huge MMA fan. I
he's
thought
betting
about
betting on a lot of fights lately.
I think he's a huge fan of the wave. He's a huge fan of the wave. Like Izzy, the wave, Patty, the wave.
So whatever's hype. Wave. Whatever's hype.
Whatever's Sean O'Malley, the wave. Jorge Masvidal, the wave. So
he bet on Sean?
I don't know if he bet on Sean. I know he bet on Masvidal, though.
But yo, I think if you're betting on Molly, that shows you're paying a little deeper attention.
Well, I think those two are like this, though, bro. Those two are like this.
Yeah, I guess.
So I feel like. There's
but she's
no
not like
the
huge
people.
Superstar like Patty is, but, yeah, but she's with him all the time. So yeah,
yeah,
okay.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's like you see Patty, you see her. So
yeah.
It's just like
yeah,
yeah.
They literally are like inseparable.
Yeah, good teammates.
Yeah.
I don't really. There's not much other fights I really want to talk about, to be honest.
Well, wait, hold on. If Drake bet on you, what's going through your mind now?
I'm like this. I'll be lit. My boy knows what's up.
You're like, I'm about to get a Rolex.
I'm like, yo, shout out to Six. Shout out to Six. Yo, Drizzy.
About you should to be do out that. There if he family. Ever bets on you, you should just be like, walk out like this.
Yeah, but like, you already know my family down in Toronto, Scarborough. Oi, oi. Shout out Grandpa. Shout out Uncle Jermaine Wagwan. You done know what they are. So,
this guy.
Shout out to Six, baby.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, Muhammad Makhachev. That is the last one I want to talk about. His fight. I don't know if you watched this one, but it was pretty much all grappling. Makhachev did really good in the first round, like pressuring and then using some crazy, like blitzing with the strikes, mixing it up with a lot of variety, uppercut, straight hook, and then into his entry for the takedown. And Johnson, to his credit, man, wow, super impressed. I knew he wrestled, but his wrestling was very much on point, defending a shit ton of takedowns, was able to get up multiple times. And I think both guys are going to learn a lot from this. Johnson's going to grow because he weathered the early storm and a hype machine behind the now 7-0 Muhammad Makhachev. And I think Makhachev is going to learn a lot from this because now he's going to see, like, man, the higher I climb in this division, I'm not going to be able to just steamroll guys unless it's the right matchup, guys that don't have that wrestling prowess. And that's what Johnson had. He was able to weather the storm. And I kind of say the same thing about Khabib wasn't able to just steamroll Ally Quinto because he had the grappling prowess. Even though it was a three-round fight that I was training for against Paul Felder, a striker, Khabib already training for a five-round fight, ends up fighting a guy who was only training for a three-round fight that goes the distance with him. Went the distance. It's because he has some type of understanding and expertise in the background of wrestling and BJJ. Right. Same thing with Johnson. I think that's what made this fight interesting for me because I'm like, if Makhachev could just run through this guy, then he's probably on his way to stardom really, really quick and just being blown through the roof if he got another finish and highlight reel finish like he did the last time. So shout out to him. I think he's going to learn from this and realize like, hey, man, I got to find a plan B because I do think it's going to be a little – he did hit a beautiful suplex throw. That was so – it was dirty. But I think he is going to see that, hey, man, I am going to be in this position now where I may not be able to take everybody down the way that I thought I could.
Right.
So let me just make sure that I'm prepared for that so that in case that time does come, I meet it head on and I can at least do what I need to do to still get the job done and get my hand raised, which he did anyway. But I think we got a lot of questions answered with just how good he really is. So. That's pretty much all I want to say about that.
What do you think's next for Curtis and Tom?
Curtis and Tom. Chris Curtis. Okay.
No. Curtis Blaydes.
So honestly, bro, I don't know. This is a weird one. It's I love that Ngannou came out and tweeted, put some respect on Curtis Blaydes' name. Because he's beaten so many good guys. And not saying he beat Aspinall by I beat you, bro. But I mean, technically he won.
He did check the kick though, right?
So it's like, yes and no. That was another one I want to pull up again and watch also. But I'm just like, it's one of those freak incidences, but it's not his fault. You know, I did Tom say anything? And I thought it was very wholesome that the two of them were sharing a beer in the hotel room. I thought that was very cool. I like that. I like shit like that, man.
Yeah. Good sportsmanship.
Yeah. And it's cool. Like, even like I said, I was like, yeah, I would have a beer with Piotr Jan. We might have a beer in Russia, maybe. He could talk shit to me. I'll talk shit to him.
If that does happen, we need to record that.
Yeah.
That's a big moment.
I'm like, you know, I was going to take you down this whole time, brother.
Yeah. Do you think we don't even know what's wrong, but sometimes the heavyweight guys, they don't recover as easily.
Yeah. So this fight was shaping up. Oh damn. What just happened? I'm watching it right now.
Okay.
I mean, not much happened. He throws the kick as Curtis crashes him with Curtis hits him with a freaking big right hand. And then Aspinall stumbles backwards, and as his foot plants, he grabs his knee.
It was like, So my thought was Curtis checked the kick. That was a hard kick. And then he fell back on his knee. Something happened in that little moment. But you just don't know what caused it.
And even the very beginning, like at the 4 minute, 56 second mark, Aspinall goes for like this flying jump knee thing. And then Curtis hits him with like a cross. And tries to hit him with a hook. And then Aspinall steps over to the side, gets kind of rocked out of the air. Not rocked, like to the head. He got hit in the chest because he jumped. And then he come back. And then Curtis lands a leg kick. Aspinall comes forward. Curtis throws a jab. Aspinall throws a hook, a 3-2. But the three doesn't really hit. The two doesn't hit at all. And then Curtis comes back with a 1-2, misses. Aspinall lands a kick. Beautiful outside leg kick. Gets off the his head off the center line. Then he steps in hard for a hard leg kick. And Curtis, I mean, it looks like he doesn't even hit the knee. It just looks like he just kicked his thigh. I mean, that's what it looks like. It doesn't even look like he hits the knee on the check. So that's why I'm like, is this like a pre-existing injury? I don't know.
Yeah, you never know.
Right? Boom. Or maybe he did it. No, I don't know.
Maybe, man, just the landing, too, because he's so big.
Yeah.
When those guys move like that.
It sucks. And I'm watching the slow-mo replay. And, yeah, it's just one of those unfortunate things. Like, a win's a win. Two main events back-to-back and in controversy like that. Yeah, because Curtis,
he knocked out the last guy.
I mean, if you checked it, normally you break the shin, right? I don't think that's the case here. I think it was just he threw a kick. It lands, dude. It lands. And as he goes backwards, he plants. And you can see, like, his knee. And he goes down. So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, you just see his leg, like, give out.
Yeah, I'm watching on ESPN Plus right now. But, yeah, that's pretty much how that looks to me. So, I don't know. Weird situation. Yair Rodriguez, Brian Ortega, weird situation. People are saying it's not the same because Yair caused it. I'm like, yes and no. I can grab some – I can have my arm just grab in jiu-jitsu and just stand up and then my shoulder could come out the socket. Like, does that mean, like, you caused it per se? Maybe if it was, like, something that was, like, bound to happen, it's just a freak incident, because that has happened so many times in training that it never happens, you know? That situation. So for that to just happen randomly in the fight, it's kind of like a freak accident, because it's like, yo, I've been in this position multiple times. That's never happened. So it's not like you actually caused this, but we were in the situation and you just happened to be the person that I was with and that caused my shoulder to come out the socket. Okay, but now we got this. He threw the kick. He didn't actually, like, check it. So I don't know. It's a weird thing. I mean, where does both of these guys go from here? No clue. I mean, I'm sure this is not going to damper anything on Tom Aspinall. And this surely won't hurt Curtis Blaydes. But what do you do with Curtis Blaydes now?
I feel like you just move on to whatever was next for the winner with Curtis. And then Tom's going to have to recover. And you hope he comes back at full clip. And they can do the rematch. That's what Curtis said. He's like, whatever's next for me, I'll just keep climbing. Because I think he wants the winner of Ty versus Cyril.
Yeah, makes sense. So
if he won the fight, so.
Yeah.
I mean, if you and I fight in the street and you get injured.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Even if it wasn't necessarily me, if you roll your ankle.
That's like Sean O'Malley and Chito Vera. So it's all the same shit. It is what it is. Sometimes it's the part of the game we play. It's just how it goes.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, that's all I got, man. Yeah. I don't really have much other than that.
My podcast brain is out of juice.
Oh, man. You know, guys, if you work hard in life, man, sometimes you could just win some of these things. So, you know. Follow your dreams, follow your heart, trust your inspiration, and you too can become a champion in whatever it is that you want to do. That's my word of advice for you. Snap into a Slim Jim.
That's
my WWE. Huh?
I think I'm going to puke.
Oh, damn, sorry. See, that was cringe. That was cringe.
Okay. I agree. All right, so we're good.
Yeah, I think we're good, man. Guys, like, subscribe. Any questions? What do you think's next for Curtis Blaydes? I know obviously Aspinall's got to recover. What do you think's next for Paddy Pimblett? Who do you think he should fight next? Let me know in the comments. I'll jump in. Jake will jump in. I'm looking forward to this, man. We got this weekend. Like I said, we got the guys fighting. UFC 277 is coming up. New podcast is coming out on that. I will have a DraftKings breakdown for you guys. Giving you guys the lines. Who I think is going to win. Make sure you guys check out that podcast. That will be coming up shortly as well. Thank you guys for always tuning in. Jake, anything you want to say? It doesn't matter what you say. No, you're rolling. Shut your mouth.
Yo, I was just going to say subscribe.
Oh, man.
I wasn't going to give myself my new any thing. Props. All right. Peace.
Peace, guys.